Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, mostly on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. So guys, thank you so much for your answers on what to do as a seller if you've got a business that's worth under $2 million, which I guess for a lot of people listening will be pretty much the ceiling, because thinking about it, if it's a multiple, we can talk about how many multiples you get, but I guess that's going to be quite hard to achieve. But let's assume that we've got one or two serious people listening who are building mega businesses. And I know that some of the people in my masterminds are pretty damn serious, and there they are on track for this. Let's say you're building a business that's going to sell for around the $5 million value. Tell us a little bit more about, we've got some different types of buyers. What do we need to do as a seller to prepare for that kind of thing?
Well, the first thing I would say, which is sounds simple, but you know, that's to get very organized. That's kind of number one. And that's not only organized in terms of your financials, which we've talked about previously, but also organized in kind of all of your other business information. Organized also around ideas and plans for growth. Organized in terms of, you know, kind of from an operational standpoint, how you believe that as the business does scale, what, you know, the right way to scale it would be from an operational standpoint, a supply chain standpoint, so on and so forth. So the first kind of order of business is, if it isn't something you've really thought a lot about but would like to strongly consider, you know, doing as far as selling your business for that kind of higher valuation, being incredibly organized and thinking through some of the things that a buyer is going to want to know your opinion on and what your plan would be. You know, a very common question from buyers is, you know, if you weren't selling the business and you wanted to double it in size, what would you do? And the what would you do, you know, it can be an incredibly long answer, because what you would you do starts from the, you know, all the way A to Z in the business, for everything from, again, acquiring product to finance to logistics to, you know, every single aspect of the business. What would you do with that in order to, let's say, double it theoretically? So no, first and foremost is getting organized around your thoughts and your information. That's kind of, I'd say, kind of the best thing to start with. And then, you know, with respect to, you know, if you're considering selling your business in kind of the not too distant future, let's say within a few months of when this exercise or this discussion would be occurring, there's not a lot you can do to change your business, let's say, in that period of time that's going to have a big impact. But that being said, if it's something more like 6 to 12 months out that you're considering maybe doing something, then, you know, the other thing would be, all right, understanding what the market's going to value and making any necessary changes. A good example might be, you have brand, you know, you have brand on Amazon, but you don't have it trademarked. Like, you don't have any of the, you know, the trademarks actually secure. That's a kind of a very, very small one, but maybe a good one. And then I think that, you know, in thinking about how you would expand the company or starting the expansion process. So you believe that you've got a great brand. Let's say you sell a lot of kitchen products under your brand, you know, going ahead and you know that there's three more products that you think would do great under the brand. Well, go ahead and find a source for those products. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and put in motion these growth ideas. I don't know if you'd add anything to that, Chris.
Yeah, I think what I would add to that is, you know, I'm just going to plug ourselves for a minute, Michael. You know, I think that's where we really, what we really do best with your sellers is that we we love to help them dig into that entire process, you know, versus just being binary and just looking at numbers times multiple equals this, and this is how we're going to sell your company. You know, one of the things that I think we do really well is the process that we take is we really like to dig in and help you strategize. We like to help you dig in and figure out what that opportunity looks like. Do you have a wholesale opportunity? Do you have opportunity off Amazon? You know, what would it look like to sell your products through your own website versus just Amazon? What other marketplaces? Can you go international? I mean, you know, these are all questions that you need to think through if you're serious about selling your large business and not just selling through Amazon. So plugging ourselves for just a minute, I would say, you know, that's something that we're really good at, helping you strategize.
Makes sense. I mean, to make that a fraction bit more general, I mean, obviously you guys are experts, which is why I've got you on. And the fact is that this is the beauty of content marketing, which is basically what I'm in the business of. Or, you know, I hate to break it to you if you're listening to me and you thought I was doing this for the good of my health, but I do enjoy it. And the point is, though, I find people who are expert, and you can tell if they're expert or not because they explain stuff that's complex in a simple, clear way, which you guys have done. So it's really obvious that you guys know your business, but also just in general, when you're looking at a complex area, to go and strategize with somebody who's an expert in it is kind of a no-brainer. And yet quite a lot of people are so suspicious of being sold into something that they just try and do everything on their own. And I just think that's the saddest thing in the world, because you're working 90-hour weeks to desperately try and sell a family business. You know, this is not smart. If you get the right input from the right person at the right time, it's always valuable. I mean, it's the same whether you're an absolute newbie or completely advanced. And one of the things that always strikes me, and I keep coming back to Tiger Woods as a go-to example, but probably really bad idea now in terms of brand, talking of brand changing overnight. But I mean, he had apparently 7 coaches at some point. And it's not because the guy can't play golf. It's the opposite. He could really, 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 really play because he had 7 coaches. So it's not a question of, I'm a really big businessman, therefore I don't need advice. I'm like actually the smartest people I know who are, for your purposes, quite small. Maybe the business is only be valued $1, $2 million, but they're scrappy as hell, but they are the hungriest for input. It's very odd, but that's a consistent pattern I've seen. So anyway, that's in lecture over, but yeah, I couldn't agree.
Talk to an expert is always the right thing. That's a great point. You know, and it's one of the reasons why, you know, with going into the business, and with the type of sellers that we're working with, Global Wired, we do a free consultation. You know, we do a free, we call it 15 to 20 minute consultation. Those typically last a little bit longer, but you know, the idea behind those consultations is to do exactly what you just said. You know, kind of give some high level coaching, and to Jason's point, to really get the seller to start thinking about what does it look like to organize your business in a way to where we can take you to market.
So it's also win-win, right? I mean, the thing is, ultimately, this isn't going to be something where you do a quick sell something quickly to somebody and run off into the night. I mean, you're going to have to educate your sellers. You're going to have to educate your buyers, I guess, as well. So it's an education-based thing. I mean, it's just complex business. So let's move on then to the next level up. If you're looking at if there's anyone lucky enough to be building or ambitious enough to be building a business that's worth more than $10 million. Just before we get into that, actually, because we keep mentioning dollars all the time, let's address this also always awkward transatlantic question. We have said, you know, divided by a common language, okay, we all speak English, and a lot of people are very familiar with New York. It feels like it's next door, but the fact is, it can be very, very different. How does it work in terms of you guys specifically being able to find buyers for businesses? Do they have to be American-based entities as companies? Do they have to be excelling in America, or can it be more international than that? How does that whole picture look?
No, they definitely don't have to be American. And in fact, one of the things about this market, which I would say is as much or more than any market that we've seen, is very much an international market. It's, you know, because of the way that Amazon works, because of, you know, just technology, there are a lot of different sellers and owners, if you will, of Amazon businesses that are all over the world, and they may live in Spain but actually sell in the US or vice versa. And so because it's Amazon, all really one large company, the selling those businesses and transferring those businesses across the globe is actually quite easy. So no, I think that, and there are a great many international international buyers for U.S. businesses, and again, and vice versa. And I think, too, one of the things that is, I'd say, a fairly recent trend from the standpoint of successful Amazon sellers either looking to grow their businesses or, you know, position their businesses more favorably, are very focused on non-U.S. markets, because the U.S. market for Amazon in particular is so saturated and competitive. Most really successful larger sellers are in multiple countries, and they host Amazon businesses of any real size, if when taken to market, will have interest from buyers from all over the globe.
Right, that answers the question, sort of the two sides of the question very neatly, really. So the businesses can be based pretty much anywhere. So I suppose there's three elements, right, aren't there? One is where the legal entity is based. Second thing is where they sell the stuff. And the third thing is where the buyer is based. And from what you've said, it sounds like anywhere you like is the answer to all three questions. Is that right? Good. Well, that's reassuring. I mean, just to make sure, because obviously a lot of the listeners will be British. I mean, I'm not obsessed with the Britishness. I mean, even though it says it behind me, I haven't got round to creating the new branding for the 10K Collective, but I'm quite happy to serve more advanced sellers, but anywhere in the globe. But that's a very interesting point. So geography really doesn't play much of a role here, which is good to know. I mean, we'll see what Brexit brings up, but I think if anything, I mean, this is another reason to consider, you know, having an international angle to things. If you live here right now, it's a scary business. I mean, I guess you guys have Trump, you know, commiserations, but that ain't nothing compared to Brexit, trust me. So yeah, that's sure. Good to know that we have some kind of window to the outside world, at least via, you know, Amazon business buying and selling. So sure. Let's get back to the $10 million valuation business that has, you know, a value that's pretty impressive, but achievable, I guess. Well, obviously, you're saying that private equity are the main buyers at this point, possibly family groups, possibly even, I suppose, maybe less common informal buyers, as you said before. What sort of things do we really need to think about if we're preparing a business to sell at this kind of higher level?
Well, the short answer is it's a lot of the same things, except the larger you go, the more amplified everything gets. And the reason why that is because the buyers get a lot smarter. They get a lot more sophisticated. They know exactly what they want and exactly what they don't want. And obviously, there's a lot more money that's being put at risk. So I think that what happens as you start to get above $10 million is, you know, buyers start to, or so let's say the right buyer for your business will start to come in, I would say, just kind of a more specific fit, let's say. So you would have a private equity group that really loves beauty products, give you an example. But you have a business that doesn't sell beauty products, but it's a great business. Well, that private equity group, they're not going to be your buyer. And so you start to actually kind of, I'll call it, we say bucket. So the buyers start to kind of get bucketed, and it really becomes a lot about the right fit. You know, does your business specifically fit this larger buyer's mandate and their thesis around what they really, really like? So as far as the core attributes of the businesses go and how important they are to attracting a buyer at a 15, 20 plus, 10 plus million dollar price tag, they just, again, they get more amplified. So if someone's going to, you know, pay $20 million, even though you're showing the cash flow to support it, they're going to care even more that you're organized. They're going to care even more that you have your supply chain tightly managed. They're going to care even more that, you know, your brand is protected. So it really becomes more of an amplification situation and a more of a bucketing of buyer fit than it does, you know, having a complete, you know, than there being a completely different list of things or attributes that you need to have or things you need to be doing.
That's very interesting. So it seems to me like actually the big sort of dividing line comes around the $5 million valuation mark from what you said, if that's accurate, yeah. Because that's when
you really need to be organized. And the only difference I can tell from what you've just been saying in sort of a step change, if you like, there's a level of amplification and professionalism that's needed. But the only step change is that it becomes all about the right fit between the type of business and the type of buyer. So, but other than that, I guess it seems like $5 million is a sort of cutoff below which you're looking at individual buyers and things are less pressured for you. But presumably, tell me about multiples then. Is there a relationship between the value of the business and the multiple you can get of the cash flow? I mean, obviously, in a sense, a bigger business is worth more. So that's not the question I'm asking, just in case that's confusing to anyone listening. But I mean, if you've got a business that is worth $1 million, what sort of multiple of cash flow are you looking at roughly there?
Sure. Well, one thing I'll add before I move on to that is that I didn't mention that I would say probably does get more important as you get larger is having a team behind your business. So having some actual employees and having an infrastructure does start to get more important as you get into those larger dollar figures. So I'll mention that. But as far as multiple goes, the short answer is the larger businesses are going to sell for higher multiples. And there's a lot of, again, reasons for that, both theoretical and just kind of market-based. But that's where, you know, you see the highest multiples are going to be for your larger businesses. So what we're seeing right now in the market, you know, today, and these trends, you know, they move around. And so what's true today may not be true 6 months from now. But right now, the larger businesses are selling much quicker than the smaller businesses, in large part because there has been a much greater interest level from professional investment groups than there was, let's say, even 2 years ago in Amazon businesses in general. But also there are more smaller businesses coming to market. So there's a supply dynamic there too, where if someone wants to buy a business that's worth, let's say, $500,000, they have a lot to choose from now, where, you know, maybe they didn't have so many to choose from a year and a half or 2 years ago. And that has also affected multiples a little bit. So, you know, I think that what we're seeing with regard, and this is, you know, it's a very, very broad generalization because it's a nuanced thing where every business is going to be looked at individually and the multiple for that business will be based on, in large part, on the individual attributes. But, you know, larger businesses we've seen go for as much as 5 times, you know, cash flow, 5 times EBITDA typically for the larger businesses. Whereas kind of something that's more in that $500,000 to $1 million range is more likely to be more like around three times cash flow. So that is quite a big difference going from 3 to 5. But, you know, that's, again, it's a function of supply and demand and the types of buyers that are looking at buying those businesses and what they're willing to pay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it's like anything else. If you've got few things going and people want them, then the price is going to be higher, right? It's pretty straightforward. I mean, supply and demand determines price. I mean, that's one thing from classical economics that seems to stick pretty well in real life. Sure. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as you say, interesting that things have changed. I mean, I suppose the two changes you put your finger on, just to reiterate that, is that many smaller businesses are coming to market. And I spoke to a couple of guys who buy and sell businesses on a quite smaller scale with even 6 months between last time I spoke about a year ago in mid or late 2017, I guess. And even in 6 months, that market had changed. So there are lots of small businesses available now. But I guess from Amazon business owners' point of view, the good news is that the large interest from professional investor groups is suddenly they've woken up to it. Hence you guys, you know, forming Providium, and Global Wide Advisors to tap into that trend. So I guess in some ways that's a lot of good news, but it also means that if you're going to make serious money, you need to be more ambitious to scale up to a bigger level than you might have needed to in the past by the sound of it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, the bigger you are, the more you're going to make, you know, from a multiple standpoint and just obviously just in pure mathematical terms. But, you know, I think what, if you have a smaller Amazon business, the thing that you, I think, are very comforted by is that the market for Amazon businesses, you know, selling those has gotten more and more liquid, bigger and bigger. There's many, many more buyers out there that are interested. So that market is continuing to get more robust, deeper, et cetera, like anything else, you have to know your competition. And if you're going to go, you know, to market, you want to understand why you have differentiating factors that, that frankly make you a better choice than, let's say, the other Amazon business that, that you're up against, or the other 20 that you're up against. So that's where differentiation now, and this happens in a lot of markets as they develop, you're starting to see now in certain size ranges where in order to get a lot of buyer interest, let's say, I mean, doesn't mean you can't still sell your business, get a buyer in and have a strong asset, you have to start to differentiate a little bit into some of those things we, you know, we were talking about before.
Actually, I mean, what's interesting is that the buying and selling of businesses, the basic marketing of it, I suppose, and economics as well, is no different to buying and selling any individual product line that you've created. I mean, differentiation is meat and drink for any intelligent Amazon seller. I guess the difference is we're trying to consider the business as a whole asset. So it's very, it's a business to business selling, and it's a different mindset. But having said that, I guess the idea of differentiation and knowing your competition is not rocket science. And a lot of us know our competition very, very well on Amazon because it's a hyper-competitive space. But I guess the difference is we consider it from the consumer sort of lens, and we need to now think about it from the other side of it, from the owner side of it. But yeah, interesting how it's just almost just a small mindset shift that over time I think will yield big dividends. So now let's get on to another subject, which I know you guys are not the specialists in doing this, but you are involved in these markets. You buy and sell businesses, you broker those deals rather than, I know you have individually bought them yourself as well, Jason, in the past. But if you're going to scale then to the point that it's obvious that scaling up is not just about a bigger version of the same thing, but the actual chance of getting your business sold is quicker and the multiple is bigger. So it's not just more of the same. So there's a value in itself of having a large scale business. So obviously to scale, the first question with an inventory-based business is where the hell do I get the cash from? So let's get into a bit of this. The first question is really, how do I raise cash? How do I raise capital? Because that is a desperate cry from any serious seller that I know is ambitious.
Well, I think, you know, what I will say is kind of pure raising of capital in this space is not terribly easy. It's not, you know, there's not a ton of resources to go out to and say, all right, well, again, we talked about venture capital and in, you know, angel investing and that sort of thing. There isn't a deep market for just purely, you know, going out and raising some capital to grow your business. So what really Amazon owners are kind of left with now is some more, you know, your more traditional capital sources, whether it be small bank lenders, you know, other kind of smaller inventory financing providers, things like that, you know, getting trade credit from your suppliers, stuff like that. And then I think that traditionally early stage companies, their first really round of funding and of true funding and true capital raising normally comes from what we call the friends and family round. And that's been around for a long time in lots of different industries of, you know, whether you, some people just call it passing the hat, you know, or calling the rich uncle or whatever. But there are ways to do that, by the way, that's much more professional and likely more effective. But, you know, kind of if you believe you have a great plan and you believe that you have a way to scale the business and you can show a strong ROI to potentially and return on investment to potential investors, then what many, many entrepreneurs do at this stage, early stages, they do the friends and family round. And that's likely going to be the very best source of capital in the short run. And then I would say, you know, from that point forward, it does take a little bit of time unless you have a war chest of capital that you can access. You have to kind of understand it. It will take a little bit of time to scale up. It's not going to happen overnight. And it will also likely require a little bit of sacrifice in the short term, reinvesting profits back into the business. But the payoff, you know, down the road will make up for that in spades. So.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. We did a round in a mastermind that I run. And mastermind, by the way, not being a masterclass where I stand at the front and pretend to be the expert, but they're all quite serious sellers. I guess collectively, I guess collectively they're doing about £10 million pounds a year in revenue, which I guess for you guys is small potatoes, but compared to most people, it's quite serious. But, and we were just went around and just asked about capital raising, and everyone said, yeah, look, it's hard. But yeah, friends and family seem to be top choice, followed by actually amazingly, some people manage to get loans from traditional retail banks for their Amazon business, which is, it's really early days for the banks. I mean, they're kind of stuck in about 1960, aren't they, banks? So I don't know why, but they seem to be. And it gradually, that is dawning on them, there's this thing called the interwebs, and they're kind of going, oh my God, well, maybe this is actually a solid investment. I'm like, well, let's just look at the stock valuation of every single brick and mortar retail ever versus Amazon and eBay. Like, yeah. It's about 15 years late, but you're beginning to wake up. So obviously for those who live online, it seems ludicrous. But have you got any tips for, I mean, obviously this is an American perspective, so I respect that if you're based in Britain, listen to this, you might have to take this with a pinch of salt or find your own version. But have you got any thoughts on how to approach anyone outside the friends and family thing? Mm-hmm. What's the next step if you're talking to a bank or anybody else like that? Any tips?
Well, again, this is going to sound a little redundant, but what any of those lenders are going to want to see is, again, quality information, you know, organized information, and a very high quality plan of action. What bankers, you know, are these days, they're not thinkers. Bankers are not thinkers. So you have to do the thinking for them. And then when you know, give them something that makes sense and that, you know, has real financial projections that you have thought through, you know, all the boxes they need to tick with their internal, you know, credit officers, then that's the most important thing is to have a really solid plan, have your information, you know, well thought out and organized, and actual financial projections put together. When I say projections, even just 3 years, which may seem like a lot to some people. And yes, we understand a lot can happen in 3 years, and projections are not a crystal ball. But what that shows is that not only have you thought about it in a qualitative way, bankers think in quantitative terms, you know, and like I said, and they don't like to do a lot of their own thinking. So if you can put together even a 3-year projection that has really sound assumptions behind it, or certainly sounds like you've really, you know, thought through it, then that's going to give you a fighting chance, at least.
That makes a lot of sense. And again, I mean, in a way, you know, some of what you said, it sounds redundant. I'm sure, fair enough. But on the other hand, I don't think it's redundant to emphasize differences in mentality. Sometimes that mentality shift is what we really need to start with. And again, it's basically a selling situation, right? I mean, I guess I'm a marketer by nature, but yeah, if you understand what the other side is looking for and also what their problems are, if you're going to make somebody look stupid in front of their boss, there's no way they're going to take it to their boss, right? If they go in with something which ticks no boxes. So it's important to be able to get your head into the fact that it's quantitative. So the story and the buzz of it, which a fellow entrepreneur might get, they just bypasses them, ticking the boxes and 3 years of projections and the mentality, you got to do the thinking for them. I think that's actually very valuable because again, it's a question of a lot of life. I find, without getting woo-woo about it, it comes down to understanding a very different perspective from our own, but about the same object. So the object is the business. We own it. We're passionate. We care about it, blah, blah, blah. Somebody else sees it as a completely different thing. And if we can get our head around that, I guess we have some fighting chance, as you said. So I think that's really helpful. Is there anywhere between the full sale of a business and something between talking to friends and family and talking to banks and full sale? Is there any sort of in-between ground that you know of and that you could guide us on?
There's nothing that we've seen yet develop in the market. And I think that that's because it's such a new marketplace. As far as, I think that even just as short as 2 to 3 years ago, there were very few stores, Amazon businesses that sold. I think at the time, as you said, a lot of people felt like, wow, Amazon is, they're a juggernaut and they're interesting, but I'm not really sure what the sustainability is. I'm not sure, you know, this whole e-commerce trend, I don't really know, you know, how long it's going to last. So there's a lot of, there was and still is some sort of cynicism around, you know, all right, well, how long is this really going to continue to grow like this shift? I think now what we're finally seeing is the acceptance of that trend, the acceptance of Amazon's position in the market. Funding around that has started to change a little bit. As you said, there are some traditional banks that are actually willing to lend to Amazon businesses now, where that wasn't the case 2 years ago. Are few now people interested in buying Amazon businesses. That wasn't really the case 2 years ago. And that middle ground a lot of times is the little bit, that's usually the last to develop a lot of times. Listen, it's quite possible that there are some small pockets out there that have started to develop that would offer, you know, more of a traditional kind of a capital, growth capital type of a solution for Amazon store owners. We have yet to come across it in our travels, but it will very likely develop, I think, in the not too distant future, because we've seen how the market as a whole has developed, and it's only a matter of time before that those solutions start to present themselves.
That's interesting. So basically, you've seen the trend developing for the investors to take it seriously and the banks to take it seriously, presumably in the bank's case, debt. And in the case of obviously you guys, you know, actually buying the entire business. So yeah, that implies to me there's obviously a middle ground. At least conceptually, it's not hard to say, well, where is the middle ground? And the answer is, well, it doesn't exist. I guess if there's a need for something and it doesn't exist yet, the chances are somebody will come up with a way of doing it. I know that Matt Ward's been on the show a while ago now. Must get him back on to see how that's developed. But he was developing a revenue share debt model, which is a bit different. I can't quite figure out how it worked off the top of my head. I did talk to him in detail. But okay. So a couple of people are coming up with smaller scale solutions specific to Amazon. So I imagine that will be a watch this space number and be interesting to see how that develops. Mm-hmm. So talking about what Amazon and where it's gone, I think let's just talking a little bit about diversifying off Amazon for the last sort of segment of this. And specifically, obviously, you guys have got a certain view of it from the point of view of people who help buy and sell, or, you know, to sell to other people, Amazon businesses. So with that hat on, where do you think Amazon's going? And I guess Chris is the Amazon person, you'll be the best place to answer this. Where is Amazon going over the next while? The growth story has been so phenomenal. We've finally seen a drop in the share price of 9% recently, jolted downwards. So something's going on. What's your take on that from Wall Street?
Jason can give a lot of color to this too as well. I mean, I'll say from our view, you know, I think Amazon's growing up, right? You know, I think I said this to somebody the other day, I think it's hitting puberty. And it's starting to mature. You know, no one really knows exactly what that looks like per se. They're putting a lot of investment in their own private label brands. I think that sellers, it's becoming more saturated. Sellers need to get smarter. They need to get more, you know, I'd use the term scrappy, but, you know, it needs to be more strategic than that. You know, they just can't go out and just start throwing punches around. They've got to really start thinking through, going back to what we said earlier about value for your company. They got to start thinking through brand, you know, and they also need to start thinking about diversifying themselves. You know, renting space from Mr. Bezos does present a risk downside, right? You want to develop something for yourself, you know, that you can really say that can bring a lot more value to your company as well. You know, moving yourself off of Amazon. You know, Amazon as a whole, I think they will continue to suppress resellers. They need to address hijacking. You know, anybody can sell on the marketplace, but, you know, I do think that's a big problem right now. Obviously, they're trying to address the whole idea of counterfeit product in relation to hijackers. You know, they've obviously come down pretty hard on reviews. I'm sure that's something that you have had some pretty large discussions about, not only on your show, but with your own you know, mastermind sellers. And so, you know, I think taking that as a proxy, Amazon is going to mature and change the way that you sell through their platform. Amazon is also very dedicated to becoming, I call it the Googlifying of Amazon. You know, their advertising revenue this year is going to hit $10 billion, and it's a significant jump over last year. And that's going to continue to grow, you know. So, you know, with that, again, you just got to get a lot more. You got to get smarter. You got to grow up, and you got to bring more value to your own business on that platform specifically. So, I don't know if you want to add anything else to that, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the specific question around diversifying off Amazon, I think that it starts to matter when you get something close to 50% Amazon and 50% another channel. That's where it really starts to make a difference in your valuation and make a difference in your market. So if you're 100% Amazon or you're 80% Amazon or you're 75-70% Amazon, it's always better to have some diversification, but you won't really see a big difference in your valuation. But if you have something that's more half and half, and I know, you know, there's a number of investors out there that actually have a in their investment criteria, they will not buy a company that's more than 50% Amazon or really more than 50% any one channel, whether it's another marketplace, you know, or Amazon itself. So that's where you will start to see an effect on the valuation. So what we've seen is the market for Amazon businesses has gotten really, really strong in the last year, year and a half. The multiples, though, there's still kind of a lid, if you will, on the multiples for businesses that are so heavily concentrated to Amazon. So now all of a sudden you can sell your business and you can frankly sell it for a lot of money. But if you look at the multiples for Amazon businesses versus the multiples for other, you know, similar retail e-com businesses that are just more diversified, those businesses are trading for higher multiples than the Amazon only or heavily concentrated to Amazon businesses.
And now, Chris, I know you've got a cool case study about that that you mentioned to me before we came on the show. So perhaps you can give us an idea about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be succinct. There's a seller that was heavily concentrated on Amazon and decided to invert and bring more value, you know, direct to consumer. And, you know, there's a lot of detail in that. But, you know, one of the tactics that they took was, you know, heavy investment in digital marketing, obviously, to drive more awareness on the brand through various advertising channels, Facebook ads, so social marketing, but then also Google ads as well. But what they did is they drove up the price of their product on Amazon. They switched it to an FBM model, not FBA, and drove people off Amazon to look for a better price because the stats say that happens. You know, last stat that I looked at, it was somewhere around 55 to 60% of people that are searching for consumer products on Amazon will go off Amazon and Google to see if they can get a better price. You know, whether that's a retail me not coupon or whether that's some type of coupon hunting, they will do that. And so this particular seller was able to drive traffic off Amazon to their own website, and they were able to invert their sales, you know, over that 50% mark that Jason mentioned. And subsequently, yes, that will fish a higher multiple for your business. It's a smart tactic. That's what I mean about getting smarter.
Yeah, I guess the seduction of Amazon is the fact that you can go to one place and they've done a lot for you. And as you say, the downsides can be pretty hideous. And a rather more hidden and more subtle downside is the fact that you can't sell your business for so much money. And I suspect also the market's mutating very quickly as more and more Amazon businesses come up for sale and as Amazon squeezes them more and wants more and more advertising revenue, which is basically coming out of our profit margins as Amazon sellers. Sure. Then because the price competition is such that it won't come out of the consumer's profit margins, consumer's prices rather. So yeah, that's going to make it more and more important, I suspect. It's a very clear, simple, long-term trend if you project from whenever anyone started selling on Amazon to now. I mean, they're just squeezing the sellers harder and harder. So I think, I suspect, and we'll talk again in a year's time and see how true that is. I suspect very strongly that is only going to get more important. So again, projecting forward from the past is always a difficult game, but the Amazon past is extremely clear. It's like the third-party sellers are tolerated and squeezed to the pipsqueak, and then they'll go and find your product directly and private label it themselves. I mean, it's the truth, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So ultimately, it is a pact with the devil. I mean, the other day, you know, I'll just show my true colors. My background is a musician, and not just a musician, but sadly a classical musician, which probably doesn't, I don't know how the hell that impacts on my business credibility, but I was working on the opera Faust, as you do. Sorry if that sounds terribly posh. And Faust is a classic story. And basically it's an old man who makes a pact with the devil, and it seemed like a good plan at the time. But obviously pact with the devil is only going to end one way. And I have to say, whilst without painting Amazon in quite such black colors, I have to say, my biggest advice to people, and this is a podcast specializing in Amazon selling, is do your best to get off Amazon because it's a risky business. I don't mean not on Amazon. I mean, just diversify away from it as much as you can.
Right? Yeah.
So I'm really glad to hear that story because it's very heartening that it's not just possible, but actually, you know, it can be done in real life with some smart tactics. And as you say, we have to grow up as Amazon sellers these days. So guys, been fantastic educational experience talking to you about the whole business and getting the Wall Street sort of angle on it with more of a, you know, a sort of investment mindset than we're used to. Perhaps as small business people run around doing stuff all day instead of thinking, well, what am I aiming at strategically?
Yeah.
So have you got any final summary advice to Amazon business creators or business builders that you think is important if they're thinking of or even possibly thinking of selling?
Well, I mean, a couple things that I'll repeat. One is, you know, I think that the motto of begin with the end in mind is a good one to have. I think that Amazon sellers should understand what's going on around them with regard to the market for their company. It's very easy. Well, any entrepreneur, and especially, you know, Amazon sellers, it's very easy to just get, you know, into the day-to-day of your business, the details of your business, and really focus on that. I think that if you are a business owner, you always need to take some time to sit back and think strategically about where is this all going and where is my exit for this and what do I need that to look like? And therefore, how do I get there? So, you know, having that end in mind and having that part of your strategic planning and thinking, I think now more than ever is really important because there's actually a market now that's developed for your company, which is a great thing. And you should want to take advantage of that in the best way possible. And so knowing about it, knowing what matters, and being able to strategically pick a good time to exit, I think is important. And I think that that's something that any Amazon business owner should incorporate into their process. I don't know, Chris, if you
would add. Yeah, I would just add from a seller perspective, I think, you know, Michael, you nailed this earlier, but you know, there's a reason why doctors go and have continuing education, right? There's a reason why they're forced to go to certain conferences and, you know, why their firms or their hospitals ask them to keep learning and they're forced to keep learning. I'd say the same thing with sellers. You know, don't put yourself in a vacuum. Don't become myopic about your business. Be open. If you need to hire a consultant to help you scale, do it because those consultants are consulting with, you know, a lot of different brands and they've got their finger on the pulse to Amazon. They have to. It's worth the money. It's worth the money to take time out of your day, out of your week, out of your month to go and learn. Join Amazon groups. Find people through LinkedIn. You know, grow your resources. I think that's highly, highly important because Amazon is changing so much. I mean, it feels like we wake up and we get an email from Amazon and all of a sudden they change something new in the TOS. And then of course, everybody goes into panic mode, right? But if you've got a really good kind of resource well, and you've got a really good resource structure to lean in on, you know, a lot of those things don't become nearly as scary. So that'd be my one piece of advice from a selling perspective.
Well, I have to say, I mean, this is a bit of self-interest here, but as somebody who runs now three masterminds, just started one for people who are doing minimum of £1 million a year. So for you, again, for you, this is revenue. So for you guys, small potatoes, but still significant relative to the absolute vast majority of people. And again, I'm really, those are the people, they actually, a couple of the members of that actually pushed me to start it. That shows you that, and that, you know, it's the hungriest people are the people who are doing the best numbers because they know the importance of education. And yeah, I think also, as you said, don't be in a vacuum. I mean, even without getting woo-woo about it, people who are doing any kind of serious numbers whatsoever, even just a family business style, perhaps more there than in the corporate structure, you have to have, you know, cojones. You have to have balls of steel. I'm trying to avoid saying the word balls on my car's cast, but I have to say it. You have to be courageous. Yeah. You have to be strong. But nevertheless, you know, the strongest people recognize that actually they're strong partly because they connect to other people. I think that connection to people is vital. A lonely fight is really one that you're beginning to lose, I think. If you feel lonely, you've already lost. As you say, if you want a structure of great resources, I mean, it should be everything. Like I said, Tiger Woods, seven coaches. I have to find a new reference. Damn you, Tiger. You messed up my reference. But Yeah, if you can tap into people who are experts in how to sell your business, even if you're not going to do it for 3 years, if you can tap into lawyers about the legal IP structures to protect things, your accountants to get really quality projections,
yeah,
a friendly bank manager worth their weight in gold, etc. It's a whole team of people outside of your immediate business structure. I couldn't agree more. So guys... Yeah.
And I would add just one more thing, if that's okay. Again, I'm just going to plug. I'm going to plug our website for a minute, and us as well, if that's cool. But you know, on our website, you know, one tool that we do provide for sellers is a valuation tool. So you can plug in your some important metrics and a couple different points of data, and it really does spit out a really good approximation of what your valuation would look like. And this was created by us. It was created by you know, years of experience in investment banking. And so, you know, instead of just having some random number spit out, these numbers are pretty, what we have found in valuation versus talking to sellers who are interested in selling their business and that we've engaged with, our approximation is really good. We have found out once we really dive into more details about that business. And, you know, I go back to one thing too. And you mentioned how, you know, a lot of your listeners, you know, they may be small potatoes or they may be smaller. That's okay. You know, we're here. We're here to help you, you know, Jason, like Jason said, begin with the end in mind. You know, if someone wants to get on the phone with us and have a quick 15-minute consultation or just to kind of talk through what they should be thinking about for selling their business, yeah, we're here. We also have some great white papers too that really kind of help guide your thinking in terms of selling your business. So I just felt it was important to plug some of those important points, not from a selling perspective, but just from, hey, you know, we want to be that resource for your listeners.
Great. So what I'm going to do, guys, to keep things simple, because Providium sounds a bit scary to sell and Global Wild Advisors will give you RSI on your keyboard, I'm just going to put a link from amazingfba.com/global. And I'll probably change that to be in 10K Collective link at some point, but we're in transition. So we'll be honest about it. The branding's a mix. Hopefully this will be on a new branded podcast, but with all the Amazing FBA stuff behind, but amazingfba.com/global. And we'll point them through to that valuation tool and any other sort of white papers and things you've got to download. And they can take advantage also of your very generous offer to talk things through with people for free, which is very useful. Why not take advantage? So that's it for me. I just think that's been a really interesting insight. And the biggest of big pictures in a way for a business owner is to contemplate handing it over to somebody else. And then you're out of the game with that. Of course, you'll probably, if you're an entrepreneur, be back in about 10 minutes. Because right, that's the nature of the beast. But I do think that, as you said, begin with the end in mind. Couldn't say it better. So guys, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
For coming on.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it, buddy.
So thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.